Chapter 42. Cascada. After the Queen's flight, Tiklok continued to perform all manner of tasks as Nargis instructed. He checked the dedication pool daily to keep it free of even the most negligible impurity, such as a catamount hair. Sometimes he warned people to flee Cascada before that band of cutthroats and bullies paid by the Lord Regent, which folk had named Matt Wick's Marauders, arrested them. Once he helped Chronicler Sewell hide heavy books in the root cellar. On several occasions he stole royal jewels back from the people the Regent had bribed and smuggled them to Nana for safekeeping. And in his sleep, he represented Nargis at the agent's moot table. He wasn't sure how he knew this tiny, flat, barren island with its wave-pounded, rocky coastline was named Moot Table. He also understood that Restorar, the spirit of sleep and healing, had conjured this place for all the agents to meet whenever one of the spirits called for a judgment. He'd been called to this magical place several times, and he found the experience terrifying, both in a good way, because it inspired awe, and in a painful way, because he felt so inadequate. Tonight, when he fell asleep in Kilty's narrow bed, a vivid dream possessed him. Seven figures stood with him in a circle on the moot table itself, a perfect oval in the centre of the island. But lots of vague reflections thronged just beyond the oval's edge. Thinking about the shadowy figures after his first visit, Tiklok had guessed that these belonged to agents in waiting, those whom the spirits had chosen to take over when their current mortal representatives, though certain spirits could extend lives past the usual span allotted to humans, passed on. Perhaps these shadowy, someday replacements also dreamed this dream, but in confused snatches, like the dreams he himself had had before being anointed. He relished one particular thing about the moot table. In these dreams, the hole in his cheek vanished, possibly because of the magic of Restorar's agent healer. Otherwise, Tiklok felt terribly out of place in front of the other agents, all of whom looked so grand in the robes and insignia of their spirits. He never got used to the fact that when he appeared there he wore a robe of blue silk, and in his hands he found a golden bowl of water that spilled rainbows if he jostled it. Healer called the meeting to order. Mason, the agent of Chaemon Spirit of Stone, had called this moot with a grievance. He strode into the centre of the oval, his cloak of stone dust shimmering.
"One of the sacred stones of Rotherod has been stolen,"
he said, solemn with heavy anger.
"Do you know who would dare commit such a crime?" asked Healer.
Mason turned slowly around and pointed his stone chisel at Tiklok.
"One of Waterbearer's countrymen, the man who rules Weirendale."
Tiklok almost collapsed at being called out.
"Lord Matwick, I didn't know. I'm sure that Nargis doesn't know. Of course, I vow we will work to return it, your stone, your treasure."
Hunter yawned, bored and disinterested.
"You called us here for a stolen rock?"
The impossibly long feather in her hat stretched out in the air, even though Tiklok didn't feel a breeze.
Mason said, "It is one of Rotherod's sacred stones. Waterbearer has pledged to return it. You are all witnesses."
"If this rock is so precious, the Rothers should have taken better care of it," sniped Hunter.
"Oh, but the Weirs are always double-dealing," said Smithy,
a gigantic man in chainmail whose very presence frightened Tiklok. Healer, as usual, tried to make peace.
"I believe Waterbearer has heard the complaint. Do we have any other business this morn?" asked Healer.
"No, Healer, dismiss us," said Hunter. "It was stupid enough to be called out for this."
Very well, said Hela, and she moved her arm palm forward in an enormous arc, starting at her left shoulder, reaching high into the sky, and finishing with her arm outstretched to the right, palm up. Moot table faded away into ordinary dreams. The very next day, Ticklock set out to find this magic rock. He would have done so anyway, out of a need to defend Nargis's honour, though the minor earthquake that shook Weirendale in the morning spurred him to take action immediately. As a lackey fetching messages and letters, he found excuses to be in Matwick's offices. Ticklock would linger casually to snatch fleeting moments when the rooms emptied to hunt through drawers. No stones there. On a second occasion, he had fumbled around the bookshelves and chair cushions, finding nothing. Heathclaw abruptly entered, and Ticklock stammered that he was checking on the firewood. Fortunately, the secretary accepted this explanation. Matwick's personal chambers presented a little more difficulty. Ticklock grabbed an ashpan as an excuse. He swept out all the fireplaces on the same hallway, watching. He had to wait a long time for Matwick's valet to leave, carrying some pairs of boots. Ticklock ducked inside, hastily peering inside cabinets and sliding his hands under cushions in the sitting room. He heard footsteps in the hallway. He grabbed his bucket and left the suite as casually as he could. The noise he'd heard turned out to be maids just walking down the hall. But by then, Ticklock had lost his nerve. A week after his moot table dream, Ticklock re-entered the Lord Regent's rooms with a canister of lamp oil. Though his hands trembled and he spilled some drops, he filled the lanterns in the sitting room. He wiped the oil up with a rag. Then, heart pounding, he slipped into Matwick's bedchamber. He'd looked under the bed pillows and squatted on the floor, peering under the bed itself, when the Lord Regent unexpectedly burst in, pulling at the neck of a shirt. "What are you doing in here?" asked the Lord Regent icily. "What are you looking for?" Ticklock made no reply, though somehow he now knew that the Lord carried the stone on his person, in fact, in a purse under his vest. "Cat got your tongue?" asked Lord Matwick. "Or did a rat climb in through that disgusting hole?" Matwick crossed the sitting room to the outer door. "Soldiers, on the double. Take this thief downstairs to the cells." The first in command of Matwick's marauders, Captain Mergan, thought he was an expert in inflicting pain. He punched Ticklock in the belly until Ticklock started spitting up blood. He broke Ticklock's fingers one by one. He stripped off his uniform and held matches to his private parts. He kept asking, "What were you doing in the Lord Regent's chamber? Who are you working for? What were you trying to steal?" Ticklock suffered, but he wasn't shocked or frightened by the pain or degradation. He had endured much worse at the hands of his own father. Mergan's efforts hurt his body, but not his heart. Besides, Nargis never left him to bear agony alone. He constantly heard the spirit in his mind, fortifying him and promising him succour in the eternal waters. Real voices brought him back to consciousness in a cramped room with thick stone walls.
"Thank you, God. I'll only be a few minutes. No, I'm sure I don't need assistance. Mergan says the thief is close to all in, and he should know."
Lord Matwick entered his cell, stepping carefully around blood and vomit. He shook his head over Ticklock's injuries as if the sight displeased him.
"Ticklock, Ticklock. What a shame you've brought such consequences on yourself. A young, strong man with many years of work left in that big body. Here, let me give you a sip of water."
He held a cup to Ticklock's lips, and Ticklock drank gratefully. Matwick wiped some blood off of Ticklock's face and stared into his face.
"I'm not going to hurt you, I promise," he said, loosening the binding on his right forearm. "I just need to borrow your hand for a moment, and then all of this unpleasantness will be over."
Very gently, Matwick placed his crushed right hand on a smooth stone. He held it there firmly, but with almost tender care.
"Who do you work for, Ticklock?"
"Nargis," he answered.
Matwick recoiled in surprise and then continued his interrogation.
"What do you do for Nargis?"
"Whatever the spirit requests."
"Have you been spying on me?"
"No."
"How long have you thought you've been working for Nargis?"
"Since I was a boy."
"Ah, I see. And a pitiful little boy you were, beaten by your father, was it? You must have gotten solace from thinking the spirit chose you."
Ticklock made no reply, just breathing to call his will.
"Why were you in my chamber?"
"I was searching for this."
"This? What do you mean?"
"This stone. The Rothers want it back."
"I would imagine so," said Matwick
with a smile of pleasure.
"Look how well it works. You have provided me with a great demonstration."
"I guess."
"Are you working with anyone else? Any other people, I mean?"
"No. Nargis chooses only one agent at a time."
Ticklock coughed a few times.
"So no one else knows about the stone?"
"Shaman knows, and his agent, and healer, and hunter were listening too, and..."
"But no one here in Weirindale?"
"I guess not."
He found it hard to breathe, and talking took too much air.
"Here, have more water, my man. You're doing splendidly, splendidly. I'm so proud of you." "And what fortitude to last so long against Mergen's treatment. Really, you have hidden depths. You know, I myself don't come from a noble background, but rather from a poor family. Maybe a little like yours."
Ticklock, in his battered state, gratefully accepted any scrap of comfort, but he still didn't care whether or not Matwick was proud of him.
"One more time, Ticklock. I don't understand. Who told you I had the stone?"
"Shaman's agent. He's called Mason."
"How very apt. And where did he tell you this?"
"In my dream."
"I see."
Ticklock's throat constricted. He tried to clear it and coughed up more blood. Matwick jumped several paces away. Then he came close and repossessed the stone. He pounded on the inside of the door. Ticklock barely made out the conversation of two men talking.
"I'm done here, guard." "Yes, sir. Do you have any special instructions?" "Tell Mergen he'll get nothing out of this man except gibberish. Dispose of this mess right away."
The next day, a rare but serious earthquake shook Cascada, destroying several poorly constructed buildings and burying a few dozen people in the rubble. And thereafter, tremors shook the realm with uncommon frequency, even in areas where no such activity had ever been known to to exist.